tonight with the first pick. Day two, NFL draft in the books. I'm Ryan Wilson. That, of course, is Rick Spielman. We don't need a countdown board because we're right in the thick of it, Rick. And 100 picks in. Going to talk a little winners and losers. We're going live on YouTube for the second straight night. So thanks to all those folks who are staying up late with us. Rick, I think you said last night you had not gone to bed past 2:30 a.m. since your junior year of high school.
Yeah, that was the last time, and it was a sleepover.
Oh, okay. Well, no sleepovers tonight, hopefully, unless something goes horribly awry. But we're going to talk winners and losers. And, you know, I love everyone. Everyone's a winner. But we'll talk about some teams and some players and some positions that perhaps didn't go quite exactly like we thought. Overall, my biggest takeaway from day two is that this class feels so incredibly deep that guys are coming off the board in rounds two and three that feel like they would have had a chance to be first-round picks in previous drafts.
Yeah, and especially early in the second round, I think the quarterbacks and the offensive players pushed a lot of these defensive guys down. It's such a deep class at receiver, so you saw some potential first-round picks maybe last year that would have went in the first round, end up going in the second, but a lot of teams got great value in the second round this year.
All right, I'm going to talk about my first winner, and I'm going to steal it from you because you have some familiarity with this organization, the Washington Commanders. You had to take a hiatus from the podcast earlier this year to help them find their general manager. Turns out you did a pretty good job because Adam Peters and head coach Dan Quinn have been hitting home run after home run. Obviously, Jaden Daniels in the first round. I think that's a pick that we all get behind. And then in round two, at pick 36, and we talked about this young man earlier today on the pre-day two podcast that we did on the CBS Sports Network. Johnny Newton somehow still on the board at defensive tackle out of Illinois. He goes 36, then pick 50 to get Mikey Sanders still. I'd heard that he had a chance to go higher on day two than he did. Then your favorite player that I piggybacked on and named him as my favorite player, tight end Ben Sinnott. He was my number two tight end behind Brock Bowers. He ended up being the second tight end off the board, so good for me, I guess. I finally got one right. I've had a rough stretch here with the dollar bets, and we'll get into that in a second. Brandon Coleman, the offensive tackle at TCU, you liked him a lot. And then they wrap things up, the last pick on day two, end of round three, compensatory pick. Luke McCaffrey did not see that coming, especially with Troy Franklin was still out there. There's some other wide receivers still available. How do you feel about this draft? Because this team is immeasurably better on paper than they were 2 days ago.
Yeah, I had no doubt that Adam Peters, his first time becoming a general manager and where he's been, he was with the New England Patriots. They won a Super Bowl there. He was with the Denver Broncos. They won a Super Bowl there. Worked under John Lynch, who I think is one of the best personnel men in the league right now, Kyle Shanahan. So when they and Josh Harris, the owner of the Washington Commanders, put him in charge as general manager, this is a result. I think not only this draft, but what they were able to do this offseason and how many veterans, the Ecklers of the world, and a lot of the guys that even the coaching staffs, Dan Quinn, were familiar with are going to come in. I think it's going to be a lot quicker turnaround in Washington than people think.
And it starts with Jaden Daniels. If he hits the ground running, if he's 75% of CJ Stroud, I'm just putting a number out there. Watch out rest of the NFC East. So, reflects pretty well on you, too.
I didn't do anything. All I'm doing is sitting here doing a podcast.
But Adam Peters is where he is in part.
I didn't hire him. Josh Harris hired him.
All right. Where are you going to get me hired?
Huh?
Whatever Rick doesn't answer. Hey,
you could be the general manager of this podcast. Oh, okay. I'm just a scout in the corner.
Does that include a pay rise or no?
No.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah, I'll take the title.
It's a pay cut here.
All right. Let's talk about another winner. I don't know how this team ended up on the list. Oh, that's right. Debo is a huge Eagles fan. Eagles had a pretty good start to the draft for their first 2 days as well. They get a first-round talent in Quinyon Mitchell. Didn't have to trade up for him. CB1 for me, CB1 for the NFL draft. First one to go off the board here, and Arnold went off a few picks later. Then in pick 40, and I'll be interested to see how this played out this way, whether there's concerns about the foot injury or something else. Cooper DeJean last till pick 40. We've talked about him throughout the process as a first-round talent, and he offers some versatility on the back end. And then they get – and this was a wild card for me because we saw Jalix Hunt down at the Senior Bowl, played at Houston Baptist. Was it Cornell where he was a safety, transferred where he became an edge rusher? He's now 6'4", 248. He looked overmatched at times, but this is a pick where you're looking to develop him, and he has the physical tools that a lot of players may not.
Yeah, when you watch him on tape, I don't know if he knows what he's doing yet as a pass rusher, but you can't teach his length. You can't teach his athleticism. You can't teach the first step foot quickness that he has, getting off the snap. You can't teach hand. You can't teach pass rush moves. So all the things that he may be lacking right now are correctable with coaching. And he's probably not going to be a major contributor this year, but as Howie Roseman's done, he usually drafts for the future, and this kid's a draft pick for the future.
Debo notes, because he took copious notes on everything the Eagles have done. Howie Roseman, the general manager, jumped in at the right time to get the cornerback here, because there were a run on corners, and we talked about that heavy offense to start. And then as we got down the process here, as we got down throughout the process here, the defensive players started going off the board. It's hard to imagine that 40 picks in, they got two first-round talents to solidify that secondary. Last year, they got Sidney Brown in the secondary. They had Eli Ricks. They got the young man out of Georgia. They have a lot of young, talented players on this defense. Struggled last year. Vic Fangio's there now. You'd have to imagine this defense is going to look completely different than it did 12 months ago.
Yeah, and one of the weaknesses on their defense was the secondary last year. And Bradbury's getting older. Slay's getting older. Bradbury had a down year last year. So to add what they were able to add to the secondary, and then plus Cooper DeJean may be their punt returner, could be a kickoff returner as well, can play multiple positions, whether it's Nick, whether it's safety, a little bit like Gardner Johnson. So yeah, he may be learning from him as well. They have Blankenship coming back. Hopefully he can stay healthy. So the Eagles, all of a sudden, a weakness on their team last year becomes a strength.
So Daniel Jeremiah said during the NFL Network telecast that Vic Fangio said that Jalen Suggs was one of his favorite players. So you get your new defensive coordinator, he gets a shiny new toy to work with, and apparently he has big plans for Jalen Suggs. So that'll be fun to watch him develop as well. At this moment, Rick, I would like to take an opportunity to apologize to the Buffalo Bills. I overreacted on Thursday night when they traded down not once but twice. The trade-up included the Kansas City Chiefs getting 4-2-1 Worthy. That's what I'm going to start calling him now. Xavier Worthy. Brandon Bean apparently knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
And what was your cautionary tale to fans and me?
Yeah, I told you, relax. There's more than just one day in the draft. And I thought Brandon Bean, because of all the talent, especially they lost on defense and some of the tough decisions they had to make because of the cap situation they were in,
yeah,
that they needed to accumulate more picks. They still got Keon Coleman, who I think is a great fit in Buffalo at the receiver position. He's going to be a red zone target. We talked about it. He plays a lot faster than he timed in the 40. He's going to be a big weapon for Josh Allen. And then they're going to be able to address the other needs on players that they lost because of either salary cap casualties or lost in free agency. They'll be able to replenish. And Brandon Bean is one of the best personnel men in the league.
Micah Hyde's gone. Jordan Poyer's gone. They re-upped the kids whose name?
Taylor Rapp.
Taylor Rapp, thank you. And they drafted Cole Bishop, one of your favorite players in this draft. On day two, pick 60 feels about right for Cole Bishop. You agree with that?
Yeah, yeah.
And you mentioned Keon Coleman. He's still young. And if you are a Bills fan and they say, hey, Mr. Spillman, I listened to With the First Pick. Ryan Wilson's currently handsome. But, oh, by the way, why didn't we take Xavier Worthy? Why didn't we take A.D. Mitchell? Why should we be happy about Keon Coleman? You sort of explained that, but why not Xavier or A.D.?
I like Xavier Worthy. I do think he brings speed. I just think when you get in the cold weather and the elements, you have to play in Buffalo in December and January, playoff football. These bigger, more physical receivers seem to hold up better in the cold weather. And I think that's why Keon Coleman's such a perfect fit for the Buffalo Bills.
And also, here's the other thing. It feels like Xavier Worthy is in a class of his own speed-wise, but he's similar in size to Curtis Samuel and Khalil Shakir, whereas you're getting a big play target in Keon Coleman. Not Gabe Davis 2.0, but at least he's a big downfield player who can stretch the field, make contested catches, and maybe do some of those things that the other players might not give you.
Yeah, and don't forget about Kincaid, who is also going to be a big target for Josh Allen as
well. Dawson Knox, James Cook, the list goes on and on. And then finally, a guy we talked about a lot when we would do the mock drafts beyond round one, Dwayne Carter, the interior defensive lineman out of Duke. They get him at 95 here. So that feels about the range he was going to come off the board as well. Started having a run on defensive linemen in rounds two and three for sure. I think seven at one point were off the board. And that feels like a pick that makes a ton of sense. Again, Brandon Bean doesn't have to worry about me taking his job anytime soon as well.
No, you can stick here and be the general manager on this podcast.
We'll
be fine. Yeah.
that's still a little heavy at times. Now,
I still think they need to get some edge presence to him and get some edge rushers. They lost Floyd. Hopefully Von Miller comes back and is much healthier than he was last year. I think Carter does a base end type fit for them on the defensive side of the ball, but I do think he has some athletic tools, quick twitch as an inline pass rusher, and you can't have enough of those guys.
All right, let's go to a team that, I didn't even know the Pittsburgh Steelers were in the NFL. That's weird. I'm not a Steelers fan. And
no.
Me and BMAC don't represent Steeltown USA, Western PA represent.
Obnoxiously.
More or less obnoxiously than Spencer Rattler love.
About the same.
It is. But you have to admit, this draft, and you know Mike Tomlin very well, would you give it an A-plus so far?
I would give it an A.
You're not a plus-minus guy.
No, I don't do pluses and minus.
You gave someone an A++ today when we were doing the individuals, but we'll have to circle back and figure out who that is. Troy Polamalu in round one, we talked about that. Maybe we didn't talk about it on the podcast. We talked about it on the various HQ and CBS Sports Network shows we did, but I'll group them all together and then we can talk about them collectively. Then Zach Frazier somehow there in pick 51, and Jackson Powers Johnson lasted longer to the second round than we thought. He went just before Zach Frazier. A handful of picks there.
That would have been an A-plus if they would have got Jackson Powers Johnson.
I'm interested to figure out the logistics of why Jackson slipped further than, because you and I liked him a lot. And personality-wise, you were really, really, he was a fun conversation at the combine. Roman Wilson goes to pick 84. I love the fit there because they need help in the slot. We had talked about potentially someone like a Brian Thomas Jr. and A.D. Mitchell, and that feels a lot like George Pickens. And you said you can never have too many George Pickens on the team.
But they have to replace Deontay Johnson.
Absolutely. Yeah. So Roman certainly fits that bill better. And then at pick 98, Peyton Wilson. And he's 24. He's had the same issues as Michael Penix Jr., the two ACLs, two shoulders. He's lacking an ACL in one knee. And that's a concern because medically you don't have the ACL there and there's going to be probably some arthritis down the road. And you talk about that with the medical staff. But the full circle moment here is that in 1998, third round pick out of Georgia went to the Steelers. And he didn't have an ACL in one knee. Do you know who that was?
I thought it was West Virginia, James Jett.
Maybe, but
he didn't have an ACL. I remember that.
This young man, number 86, started out as a special teamer, played quarterback at Georgia for a time.
Yeah, Hines Ward.
And he had a pretty good career. So maybe that's the link that you want to make in terms of the productivity expectations for Peyton Wilson. But tell me about this draft. They went offense, picks 1, 2, and 3, and then got a real – I mean, they needed help at linebacker, and Peyton Wilson feels that need too.
The Matt Canada offense is officially dead. Arthur Smith's coming in. They're going to be a physical team. They're going to try to run the ball. Now, with what they did addressing the offensive line, I think that's going to take care of itself. It's going to help Russell Wilson or Justin Fields, but I think it's going to start out to be at least Russell Wilson right now. And then Peyton Wilson, the only Wilson they didn't draft was Ryan Wilson.
The biggest fan.
Yeah, and I'm not so sure you may be gone by the seventh round tomorrow.
Yeah, there you go. Then we'll have to do the podcast on the road. I joked, Debo, that and Rick, to his credit, has been inundated with Steelers chit-chat and Bears chit-chat because we're here with Joe Musa, who understandably should be incredibly excited about the Caleb Williams-Roma Dunze start to their draft. But there's a good chance, Rick, Steelers-Bears Super Bowl, and you want to make that dollar bet or no?
I'll make that dollar bet since you're, like, probably down. I mean, right? We didn't even get to where the bets are right now.
It's closer than one might expect, according to Debo. So,
all right. I'll be looking for my Zemo account.
We have to get that graphic for the podcast as well. Okay, great draft by the Steelers. One last thing. At any point, assuming Russ Wilson is fully healthy, at any point is he replaced by Justin Fields, do you think?
I think as long as Russ is healthy and he's playing at a high level, that'll be Russell Wilson.
Yep. No, I agree with that. All right. All right, end of the night, Debo says I can give you the update on the $1 bets. We have 5 more heading in tomorrow, and things, I'll just tease, are a little closer than you might think.
Yeah.
Very interesting, as Rick Spielman might say.
Very interesting. You have to say it with the accent.
Okay. you're the accent guy. I'll just say this, by the way. Producer Debo, you will be able to commiserate. Rick, as you admit, don't remember names. You call me Bob. Willie, Johnny. This man knows every lyric to every song that's ever been on the radio. It's insane the recall he has. You are, without a doubt, the Rain Man of music. So that's an interesting twist I didn't see coming this week. But singing voice needs some work, but the lyrical recall is top-notch. All right, next up, Michigan. And, I mean, sweet mercy alive. I wonder how this team won the national title. All they do is get guys drafted in the first and second round. Of course, J.J. McCarthy went in round one. And then Rick, we have Chris Jenkins, the defensive tackle, goes 49 to the Bengals. Sander Sill, we talked about, went 50 to the Commanders. Junior Colson, the outstanding linebacker, goes to the Chargers at 69. That's one. You have one in the 2.5.
I got to get two more.
That's right. So one of the $1 bets is that former Michigan coach and now Chargers coach Jim Harbaugh takes at least three of his former players. Junior Colson makes that 1-2 to go for Rick. Blake Corum goes 83 to the Rams. I love that pick there just because of the success they had with Kyron Williams. Excuse me. We talked about Roman Wilson to the Steelers. And then Zach Zenter, who you know, noted earlier today, had the leg injury, still ends up going 85 to the Browns. Absolutely stacked Michigan team.
Yeah, and when you look at the Michigan team, they're usually well-prepared coming into the NFL. Excellent coaching. Jim Harbaugh did a phenomenal job bringing in this talent. As you notice, there are not a lot of blue chip guys, whether you want to call J.J. McCarthy blue chip or not, but he was the only first rounder.
Yeah.
But all these guys that went in the second round will fill needs either as starters or as role players at the next level. And these are the type of players that are high character, well coached, that'll help NFL teams win.
So I'm doing a little count here. So I think I got 10. So some defensive winners. I went to the defensive linemen who were drafted. Only one in the first round, our guy Byron Murphy. And then I think there were 10 defensive linemen in rounds 2 and 3.
Especially the defensive tackle run in the second round.
Yeah, so Rook.
Okoro.
Ruko. He was the first defensive tackle, and that was a surprise. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, because he may have the most upside because of the athletic traits. He didn't play a lot of football in high school. I think not till his junior year. He needs to get a little bit lower pad level, but you can't teach his size, his athleticism, his quickness, and his speed. So that is a little bit of a project, but he has such a tremendous upside to him that the ceiling's so high. So coaches, when they look at these type of guys, you can't teach what they have physically, but you can teach what they from a technique standpoint to improve him and make him better. And this kid has an opportunity to get with the right coach that will really take his game to the next level.
I had him going in the second round, but he went 35 overall. So congratulations to him. I didn't see that coming. But again, that's why I'm the GM of this podcast and I'm the GM of the NFL team. So Rook Okoro, we have to learn his name. It's so hard to say. So I apologize
to
Rook. You're not helping. Then Johnny Newton at 36, the very next pick. And I don't think anyone on planet Earth, at least in the with the first pick universe, had Johnny Newton going after Rook.
No, that was a little bit of a shocker.
A bigger shocker, and this guy, the young man's a winner, and we'll see how it works out. Tavondre Sweat had the DUI a few weeks ago. He weighs 360. You wonder if he's just a two-down guy. And the fact that he went 38 clearly ran Carthon and Brian Callahan had no such concerns.
Yeah, no, they must have did their research and felt comfortable with the DUI. But this guy, no question about being a zero nose or a nose tackle that can stuff the run, take on double teams. He does have sideline to sideline range,
which is funny.
He's not Jordan Davis,
right?
Yeah. Who was another massive man that Philadelphia took in the first round last year. But the biggest question is, I don't know if he's going to help them much as an inline pass rusher on third down. But to get more physical up front, they were able to do that, addressing some of the offensive line needs, and also now adding Sweat to that defensive front.
And by the way, maybe we've had a preview of what this is going to look like, because Tavondre Sweat and Byron Murphy, maybe that looks something like Tavondre Sweat and Jeffrey Simmons.
We'll see.
Yeah. And Braden Fisk, a guy we love, then Mason Smith went picks 39 and 48 to the Rams.
Another guy with a huge upside.
Yes. And we saw him at the LSU Pro Day. He went to the Jaguars. Chris Jenkins, we talked about him as the Michigan player, went to the Bengals, another athletic freak. Michael Hall Jr., who we've talked about in the past, we thought he would go on day two. On day two, he goes. He goes to the Browns, so he's not going very far down the street. Twitched up, but as you've noted, needs to get a little stronger against the run. He plays with high pad level.
Just so you know, it's up the street, not down the street. Columbus is in middle of the state. Cleveland is, you have to go north to get to Cleveland.
I didn't know. I don't know Ohio very well. I know
apparently not.
I know Western Pennsylvania because that's all that matters.
Yeah.
There's no football.
Yeah, they're a suburb of Ohio.
Marshawn Nealon went off the board. I think he's listed as a defensive lineman, probably more edge if we're being honest about his future.
Yeah, no, and just watching him down at the Senior Bowl, I think that's where he started to make his climb or his rise through this pre-draft process. Talking to one of the defensive line coaches that actually coached him down there, felt he had the best first step quickness out of any defensive lineman that he had, that he was coaching down there, and the most natural bend at the edge and flatten to the quarterback.
So he goes to Dallas. That's a need there. And Dwayne Carter, we talked about going to the Bills. And then finally, McKinley Jackson out of Texas A&M, who I liked throughout the process. And I talked myself out of him, and that's on me. That's what I got to.
Another big two-down nose tackle on me. And I don't think they'll help him with pass rush, but he's definitely going to help him in run defense.
And telling that on day two, the Bengals got McKinley Jackson and also Chris Jenkins. So they're concerned about beefing up that unit, and that's exactly what they did. And
well, they probably saw what Pittsburgh did. They know Cleveland's going to run the ball. So that is a, if you want to call it a black and bruise division, because it is a physical brand of football in the AFC North.
And Debo notes, in terms of the winners along the offense, most offensive linemen drafted in the first three rounds, 25. And
that tells you how deep this class was.
Exactly. And let's hit a couple. We're not going to go through all of these guys. I'm seeing I don't want to mention one guy because I know you'll be yelling and screaming about him. Oh, I know who we're talking about. Pick 71, your guy, Isaiah Adams, goes to the Cardinals.
Yeah, no, I love this kid. He played out of position at Illinois. He was a right tackle. This guy is a ballroom brawler. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have the athleticism to play on the edge or tackle at the NFL, but slide him inside the guard, and he's going to go toe-to-toe with anyone in the NFL.
And similar type player in terms of the description you gave as not being afraid of anything. He feels like this player, even though he played on the opposite coast. He's going to Seattle, pick 81, Christian Haynes, the interior.
Yeah, loved him. Loved him down at the Senior Bowl, and he was probably one of the most competitive offensive linemen we've seen down there. The biggest issue with him is he does not have, in my opinion, position flexibility. He's a guard only, but he's going to definitely compete for a starting job with the Seattle Seahawks.
So Jackson Powers Johnson, probably not a winner in his eyes because he probably thought he was going to go 20 picks higher, but pick 44 to the Raiders, and that's a need for the Raiders. I like that pick there after in the first round they got Brock Bowers. Brock Bowers is a great player, no doubt about it. And Zach Zinter, we talked about previously.
Right. The one guy that I thought would have went today, and he's probably going to go early tomorrow, is Mahogany from Boston College, who's another one of those barroom brawlers. It's best in a small area, but he's going to go toe-to-toe with anyone.
And I don't think – I double-check because I haven't updated my notes because we've been working all throughout the draft here, but I don't think Christian Jones has gone off the board either. Is that
correct? No.
Yeah, a guy that we both liked. I thought he had a chance maybe at day two. He's still out there, and he could be a bargain on day three.
Yeah, and he was right tackle with Texas, another physical player that's probably going to be best suited inside at guard.
All right. We're going to hit some best players available at the end. Now, let's talk about some – I don't want to call these guys losers because this is unfair. Primarily because
guys that may have been disappointed.
Guys who were disappointed, and it starts with me because I was incredibly disappointed that Spencer Rattler was not drafted on day two. I had almost talked you into it, did I not?
No.
I don't know. The 2 p.m. show, after the 6 quarterbacks go in the 12, I think you were like, oh my gosh, these guys might fly off in rounds 3 and 4, but or 2 and 3, and it didn't.
No, I did not say round 2. I said maybe at the end of round 3.
Yeah, my bold prediction was that Spencer went in round 2. And Michael Pratt went in round 3.
And that was ching me.
Oh, and two in terms of the dollars going your way. I don't know if those were dollar bets. I hope they weren't. I think they were.
$10 bets.
Okay, so Spencer Rattler still out there. Third time, no quarterbacks drafted in rounds 2 or 3, going back to 83 and 94. Let me ask you this, because it feels like if you're not a first-round quarterback, once you start getting out of the first round, unless you just stumble upon goal, and I think I would still consider Will Levis a first-rounder. He went 34th, so he was right there on the edge. But typically – second rounders and beyond don't work out. So maybe you're just waiting till rounds 4 and 5 to get the quarterbacks and addressing other needs.
Yeah, because most of those guys are probably going to be backups. I think we even saw that last year with Aiden O'Connell, the Fresno State Hainer, who went to the New Orleans Saints. So those are a lot of those, the kid from Georgia, Bennett, that went to the LA Rams. So a lot of those guys did not go until day 3 in the draft.
All right. So I'm hesitating because does it make sense for the Giants or the Raiders to draft a Spencer Rattler or Michael Pratt, or is it just going to be a team that needs a developmental quarterback? And I did Pittsburgh Radio on Friday before day 2 started, and the host asked me, do you take Spencer Rattler if he's there in the 4th round in Pittsburgh? I don't think you do, but those are the sorts of questions you're asking once you're not considering these players as going to be starters in year 2 or 3.
Unless you're going to redshirt Spencer Rattler or just keep him as a third quarterback, because I don't know what's going to happen with Russell Wilson there next year. I don't know what's going to happen with Justin Fields next year. So if you want to stack another one, a young guy to learn the system, maybe that's a good spot for him.
Okay. Also, Jordan Trapp's still out there. We expected that because of the injury. Joe Milton, I don't know if I said this on the podcast. Hopefully not in retrospect, but I thought maybe the bold prediction, maybe he goes in round three because he's overdrafted.
I hope I bet a dollar on that one too.
Yes, no, I'm just losing money left and right. And let's see. So I'll read you some names. You tell me if you think they get drafted on day three. Joe Milton has to get drafted, right?
I think maybe someone takes a swing at him in a sixth or seventh round. Okay. And the only reason I'm saying that is because this was such a top-heavy draft, and there was only 58 underclassmen that came out this year, the lowest in over a decade. So some of these guys, someone has to get drafted. So these guys that may have normally been a college free agent, because the lack of depth, I think, especially in the sixth and seventh rounds, you're going to see guys get drafted.
Notre Dame, Sam Hartman.
Free agent.
Our guy, we liked him a lot, Gus Bradley's son, Carter Bradley, out of South Alabama.
Yeah, free agent.
Is he better than Tyson Bagent?
I don't know if he's athletic, but he did throw a nice ball. Yeah. And first time I had exposure to him was down at the Senior Bowl, and I thought he had a great week down there.
And to be fair, Tyson Bagent was undrafted. Had to start the games. He did really well. And then finally, I'll ask you about Devin Leary out of Kentucky, by way of NC State.
Free agent.
All right. I'm saying that here's a dollar bet, Debo. Out of Sam Hartman, Carter Bradley, Devin Leary, I mean, there's no way two get drafted. Will you take the bet if I say one gets drafted?
Well, whatever. That makes you happy. It's like, what time is it? It's 1 in the morning. Yeah. I usually go to bed at 9:30. So whatever makes you happy, you beat me down. I'll do
there
whatever
is,
you want to do.
All right. One of those gets drafted. I'm going to get in the dollar. If none get drafted, then I'm just quitting. All right. Let's look at the running backs. The second latest, the first running back came off the board. And that, of course, was the young man out of Texas.
Jonathan Brooks.
Jonathan Brooks. Thank you. I'm also struggling at 1 a.m. Surprised at that? We talked a little bit about it. He went pick 46 overall. That felt about right because of the ACL injury.
Yeah, and he may have went earlier if he didn't have that ACL, because he was the most gifted running back out of this class. Not as good as last year. There was no Jahmyr Gibbs. There was no Bijan Robinson. So, you know, we were talking about it earlier. Is it because the running backs are devalued, or just the talent level of these running backs coming out in the draft this year?
All right, let's go through these guys. So they're losers just because of the
– not losers. Disappointed.
Overall, yeah, the overall position group is disappointed that they didn't get drafted higher. They're all winners in our books.
Right.
So only four have been drafted through three rounds. Debo actually did the hard work on the rundown. I still didn't read it. Jonathan Brooks at 46, as you noted, to the Panthers. Trey Benson, 66 to the Cardinals. Blake Corum, 83 to the Rams. We talked about that because of the Michigan connection. And Marshawn Lloyd, who's a fun player out of USC, he went 88 to the Packers. All right, so here's a little game here, Rick. You tell me who's going to be the most productive of this group. Jonathan Brooks is a huge help in Carolina.
When he's healthy,
but right, adding something appearing to be close to explosiveness, which was lacking obviously last year. Trey Benson is going to be fun in Arizona. It certainly feels like Blake Corum is going to be sharing carries with Kyren Williams, and then Marshawn Lloyd will be sharing carries. AJ Dillon's in the last year of his deal. They just got
Josh Jacobs.
Thank you. Who's going to be the most productive by the end of the 2024 season?
I'm going to say Jonathan Brooks.
And it may be the case, I think November, maybe he tore his ACL, so maybe he's a late starter in the fall, but maybe he gets going 12 months after the injury.
Yeah, and I just think with Carolina hiring David Canales, the offensive coach, as their head coach, he's going to want to run the ball, because that's going to be able to set up play action and hopefully help Bryce Young have a better sophomore year than he did his freshman year.
Oh, boy. If he has a worse, we're going to be talking about quarterbacks, and that's not even a joke. And you... me don't want that, because Pete Prisco remains a nemesis. All right, another group of young men who are disappointed, except for the three that got drafted, the tight end group. Brock Bowers, of course, won the first round at 13. We talked about that yesterday and how that made sense or didn't make sense if you're the Raiders. Great player. Is the fit a good one? We'll find out. Then at pick 53, we talked earlier about Ben Sinnott. You loved Ben Sinnott for a while. You talked me into him. We talked to him at the combine. He's a great young man, had a great Senior Bowl, told teams that he compared his game to Sam Laporta. And do you see that, or do you laugh at him you laugh at me with my comps?
No, I kind of even mentioned that. I said a poor man, Sam Laporta, back in the fall, just because he can play multiple positions. He can line up at H-back. He can line up at fullback. He can line up as a traditional Y. He gives good effort as a blocker. He's not over-dominant. He is a better athlete than people anticipate. He can catch the ball. He has some run after catch. So I think he's just a utility knife that a lot of offensive coordinators, and now he's with the Commanders, that Cliff Kingsbury will be able to use.
And then Tip Riman went off the board.
That was a little surprising.
Very surprising. I just checked. I had a fifth-round grade on him, and I liked his tape, but I didn't like it as much as some of the other players. The Cardinals took him there, and now they also have their former second-round pick, Trey McBride, there. Elijah Higgins is also on the roster. He moved from tight end to tight end from wide receiver at Stanford, and he plays more like a tight end. But so they've upgraded the offense. Listen, man, Trey Benson, Marvin Harrison Jr. We talked about Isaiah Adams, the guard that's probably going to have an opportunity to start. And then Tip Riman. They're not messing around in a division where you need to be able to be able to score points.
Yeah. No, I thought they've done a good job. And Monte Austin Ford has done a great job starting to assemble that roster.
So Tip is a good blocking tight end. But some of the guys who are also out there, I've been talking up Theo Johnson for a while out of Penn State. Jatavion Sanders is still there. I'm surprised Kate Stover didn't make his way into the day two.
Yeah, because I thought he had the ability to run block. He improved as a pass catcher, improved as a route runner. Remember, he was a linebacker that was converted to tight end. He's played there, I think, the last 2 years at Ohio State. So I still think this kid is learning the position, has a lot of upside. I thought for sure that he would have went in either second or third round today.
And you felt pretty good about TCU's Jared Wiley going on day two?
Who?
Jared Wiley. You like Jared Wiley.
Oh, yeah, the TCU. Yeah. Long, athletic kid. Mm-hmm. Can make plays in a passing game. Gives effort. Needs to get stronger as a run blocker. But I think that someone's going to get a pretty good tight end today, on tomorrow, on Saturday. Although today is Saturday.
And sometimes it's hard to, from the media evaluation perspective, I want to hear what you say about this. It's hard to tell who these tight ends are, because a lot of times they aren't asked to do a lot. I mean, look at Sam Laporta. So maybe it's a situation where the Cardinals saw something as it fits with the offense they want to do, and maybe other teams didn't. Is that hard to figure out who these tight ends are sometimes?
Well, sometimes it may be scheme fit. So maybe they were looking specifically for a run blocker, you know, because they have McBride, who's turned out to be a pretty good receiver.
Yeah.
Was very good when he came out of Colorado State. So I think that they were looking for a run blocker, and he may be the best run blocker of the guys that we just talked about.
And that's a good point. And he is a good run blocker. And if that is, in fact, the direction they were going, there was no way Jatavion Sanders was going to be there.
No.
No disrespect to Jatavion. We love him. But run blocking, that's where he's going to have to improve. Down the field, he's pretty good. All right, another team that made some curious selections. Michael Penix Jr., we talked about that. It's not about Michael Penix Jr. It's the fit in Atlanta. We talked about Rook Ahorohoro. You certainly made the case for why it's not necessarily a surprise that he went as high as he did.
Except it was a surprise he went ahead of Johnny Newton.
That was, in fact, a surprise. Maybe Johnny Newton's foot was an issue. And then at pick 74, they get Braylon Trice. That actually feels like value. Here's my question. If you just sort of reshuffled where you took the players in this draft, so, you know, you take Byron Murphy or Dallas Turner or whomever, and I later learned earlier today, after round one, that the Falcons were never in the Dallas Turner business at eight. I wish I'd known that before when I did my final mock draft, but I found that out after the fact. But it feels like if you reordered these and maybe take out the Michael Penix Jr. situation, this team could be a little better than they are right now.
Yeah, well, I thought they did great in the offseason because they built a roster to compete and potentially win the NFC South, which is one of the weaker divisions in the NFL. So getting Kirk Cousins, getting Moore from Arizona, getting Mooney from Chicago, they built this come in and compete now. So it was a little peculiar on how they approached this draft, because I think there were some better players on there that could have made an immediate impact, that could really have maybe not only helped them win the NFC South, but even advance in the playoffs.
Yeah, so we'll see. Maybe this ends up being a home run. Maybe Michael Penix Jr. goes to the Hall of Fame. But Braylon Trice, we liked his tape a lot, and we talked earlier in the pre-draft, pre-day two conversation. I thought maybe he was going to slip to round three. You thought he had some second-round value. So this it's a good pick if it works out and it fills a need.
Well, there's no question he's going to play with his hair on fire. This is a guy that comes humming off the edge. May not be as athletic as some of the other edge rushers that went earlier than him, but the effort and energy is there. And when you watch him on tape, a lot of his sack production comes off second effort, not right. off him initially beating an offensive tackle.
Another team that made one curious selection. I understand the Caden Wallace pick, the right tackle out of Penn State. I talked about him last week before the draft. He's one of the players that I liked. You liked him a little less. He's going to have a chance to start right away because they need help at offensive tackle. They do have Michael Owenu out there. Let's see what they do with him. Maybe they move him inside. They have like 55 guards on the roster, it feels like. Either way, the other pick that I want to focus on is they traded out of pick 34, I believe it was, the Patriots did. Moved down three spots to get Jalen Polk with our guy Ladd McConkey sitting there. They play different positions. I understand that. Jalen Reagor's now on the roster. They have KJ Osborne. They have Kendrick Bourne. They have DeMario Douglas. So maybe this is a fits a different role as on the outside. But if you and I have talked about this, Ladd McConkey feels like a pretty easy choice.
Yeah, but even was A.D. Mitchell still on the board at
yes.
the time?
Yeah.
So to me, I would have probably looked at both of those two before I went with Jalen Polk.
Yeah, maybe A.D. fell. This is interesting. I said this to Debo.
In your staff meeting that I'm never included in?
Yeah, yeah. Like you were eating the almonds.
Rick, just show up and just start talking on the podcast.
The almonds that still has given Debo nightmares watching you eat those things. But I'll double check, but I'm pretty sure that at the end of the day, A.D. Mitchell ended up going to the Indianapolis Colts, right?
Yep.
He did. And I haven't had a chance to listen to all of it, but we saw on social media, Chris Ballard gave what appears to be an impassioned response as to why A.D. Mitchell reportedly fell and why the Colts ended up taking him. So who knows at this point? If they gave him a clean bill of health and there's nothing there, good for the Colts and good for Chris Ballard, and hopefully AD can prove people wrong. But to your point, if there's nothing off-field to be concerned about, that's another name that could have been a potential.
And that's the one thing we don't know. We don't know the off-field. We don't know yeah. all the medical information. We don't know all the tests that they've taken through this pre-draft process. So basically, when we're watching, we're just grading off of what we see on tape.
Exactly. All right, the Titans are also on the list just because – Tavondre Sweat went so high, not because he's not a good player. The two-down issue is the pass rusher issues you've talked about. And also, there he went relatively high among the defensive line group. But to your point, if Rand McCarthon and Brian Callahan were fine with it, who are we to say whether it's going to work out or not?
No, and then we'll do a redraft, what, 3 years from now?
It'll be the first player taken.
Yeah.
Right. And
you'll do a redraft.
And then I will get absolutely demolished on social media because people do not like my redrafts. All right.
Do they even like your pre-drafts? The mock drafts?
Better, apparently, because – and I told Debo to pencil in this summer, we're going to do a redraft, a Brandon Ayuk versus CeeDee Lamb, because people are killing me for that one.
And you would take Ayuk over CeeDee Lamb?
Here's why. Because when they drafted Ricky Pearsall, your favorite player in the world, the first thing Brandon Ayuk did, according to Adam Schefter, is text – his general manager and head coach and say, that is a fire pick, and fire means good. They were teammates at Arizona State. So he's a team player.
That's good.
I thought it was going to say, trade me now. It went the exact opposite direction. So he wants to win, and I'm filibustering because Debo wants me to ask you the tough questions. Here's what it reads. Terron Arnold and Ennis Rakestraw Jr., does that make sense for the Lions?
It does. Absolutely makes sense.
I think it
sense.
Does, right?
Yeah. No, because they had lost Cam Sutton,
yep.
you know, because of the issues he had off the field, so they had to let him go. Emmanuel Mosley, who they signed last year, has two ACLs. They needed to replenish that secondary. Gardner Johnson went back to Philadelphia, so they have Kirby Joseph coming back at safety. But these two guys, I think, now they traded for Carlton Davis,
yes,
I believe,
sir.
From
yep.
Tampa Bay, which will give him a vet presence. I think Terron Arnold is going to be a similar impact that Brian Branch had because he ran 4.51, but plays much faster than that, can play inside or outside. And I think Rakestraw also has position flexibility. May not get on the field right away, but we've talked about it. Witherspoon-like attitude and way he hits and is a tone setter on the defense. A typical Brad Holmes, Dan Campbell draft pick. Guys that just love to play football, guys that are accountable, and I think both these guys fit that bill.
And last year, don't forget, I mean, why would you forget, but for people listening or watching, we were like, okay, what are the Lions doing? They didn't draft for their needs in the first round. All they did was get
– good football players.
The running back, Jahmyr Gibbs, the linebacker, Jack Campbell, and then Brian Branch they got in the second round, first round value. That worked out pretty well.
And Laporta, don't forget.
Sam Laporta, oh yeah. Forgot about him. Also a second round pick. I mean, golly, there's no way Brad Holmes isn't doing a podcast in 2 years with all those picks. He's just crushing it. All right. Best players available day three, and then we'll wrap this thing up so Rick can get to bed. Why could these guys be
falling? Why isn't Debo giving us a break tonight? Don't we have a Paramount Plus commercial in between these?
You're giving us a peek behind the curtain here, but he's going to take care of that on the back end. He wants us to get through this. He wants you to go home and eat all the almonds you can eat before you lay your head down to rest here. Best players available day three. Chris Abrams' drain is still out there. I thought he had a chance to be a day two guy. I'll mention a couple of names, and we'll group these guys together. You can give me some of your thoughts. Troy Franklin was number 46 on my list. Jaden Hicks, the safety out of Washington State. Troy Franklin, of course, is the wide receiver out of Oregon. Jaden Hicks was 56. And then a guy that you liked early on in the process, number 61 on my list, TJ Tampa out of Iowa State, the cornerback. So assuming just on field, scheme fit, maybe there's some injuries we don't know about. Why would these guys be slipping a little bit?
Well, that's the burning bush question.
Yeah.
So if they look like they have day two value,
yeah,
but there's something going on. Maybe Jaden Hicks, because teams feel he's better closer to the line of scrimmage and he can't play back as a single high safety because of the limited athletic ability. No question about his instincts as a football player, but how many teams still use those guys, just old school, strong safety type players?
Yeah, and I was talking to you about this when the Steelers were on the clock for their final pick in the third round. They took Peyton Wilson. I said, nah, Jaden Hicks here, but no. And sometimes we're wrong a lot. And guys that you think are going to go into the third round end up going in the sixth or seventh round, and they don't work out. That doesn't mean these players won't, but sometimes there's a reason these guys are falling. Christian Jones, we talked about, the right tackle out of Texas. I like him a lot. Javon Baker, UCF, by way of Alabama, I believe.
Yeah.
I think he has a chance to be a good player who can get some wide receiver four reps next year.
Yeah, because I think the biggest knock on him is going to be speed.
Mm.
He does have good hands, but he's more of a possession-type receiver, and he's not overly big to be a possession-type receiver.
Dadrian Taylor-Demerson, we've talked about him.
That player.
Yeah,
I think someone's going to get a steal in the, tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because I think this kid has the speed and the athleticism to play as a single high safety on the back end. Love the way he comes up and competes and runs support. I do think he's a little jerky in his movements at times, but this guy flies around and is always looking to make plays.
Had a great Senior Bowl as well. DJ James, the cornerback out of Auburn. There's Nehemiah Pritchett, the cornerback out of Auburn. There's Jalen Simpson, the safety out of Auburn. That's a good group. None have yet to be drafted. I thought that DJ James and Jalen Simpson maybe would go top 120, so perhaps there's a chance. But it could be a situation where we saw the run on offensive linemen, we saw the run on the defensive linemen, and sometimes these guys, good players, get pushed down too, right?
Yeah, and I think these guys may fit more in the Nick category or the guy that's going to play over the slot rather than just pure outside corners.
Ania Smith, I liked him more than you did, the Texas A&M slot receiver returner. You didn't think he had as much juice as I thought. Clearly the league agreed with you.
Yes.
Big deal.
Yep.
Kyrie Jackson, also an Alabama transfer, went to Oregon. Long, I think he ran 4.5. I thought he was fast enough, had a good Senior Bowl. This feels like a value pick in day three.
Yeah, better in man coverage and zone coverage, in my opinion.
And then, of course, Spencer Rattler, number 80 on my list, number one in our hearts.
Please, someone just draft him so I never hear his name for the rest of the show.
I know. I've worn you down officially. All right, that's it. That's a wrap for our day two coverage here. I have to update you quickly, Rick, on the dollar bets. We've had $18 bets throughout the draft, this draft cycle. What do you think the score is?
I have no idea.
Rick is up 10-8. Watch out, my man. We have 5 to go. You might lose. That's all I'm going to say.
Really? 10-8? I think Debo is doing some little shuffling on the side. Some of them were gifts to you, too.
That's true. Debo very unkindly notes, I already have more wins this year than I did last year when it was 14-7. So I'm making progress. You know, we're not a playoff team this year. We just want to win more than we lose. And then next year, while you're fat and sassy with your victories, we're going to come up and sneak up and get you. All right, Rick, we're getting out early tonight. It's only 1:20 in the morning. You're going to get home earlier than you did last night. Day 2, 2024 NFL Draft in the books, round 2 and 3. Of course, we'll be back for day 3, rounds 4-7 to recap it all. Give you grades. Thank you guys who watched, listened, and comment. Thanks to Rick. Thanks to Theo for producing, and we'll see you guys tomorrow.